Turn, if you would, to 1 Timothy. While I take out my James Bond glasses. There we go. Ding, 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 ding. Sorry. 1 Timothy, it's right before 2 Timothy. It's brilliant, huh? It's one of the T books, by the way. There's a bunch of T books that are all together. Timothy, Thessalonians, Titus. Okay. There's Tim. All right. Background. Timothy. What do we know about Timothy? Well, scholars know a good deal about Timothy after a while. I think I know about Timothy early on. I know it sounds arrogant, but that's just follow me here. Because when you read the life of Timothy, you read what went on in his life. They catch Timothy a good deal past. There's a connection with Paul because he was a son in the Lord with Paul, and then there's actually a written history of him from beyond. But what was it beforehand? What went on? It's kind of like Jesus at age, 13, 14, 15. Where's the story of that? And I have this little book that's really cute. It's called Young Jesus. And it's all these little cartoons about what Jesus was when he was, 5 and 10 and 15. My favorite is it shows Mary with Jesus and she's nursing, but it's a picture from the back, so you don't see anything. She's just nursing. It's called The First Supper. So, boom, boom, ching. Yeah, exactly right. So, if you like that kind of book, The Young Jesus Chronicles, it's really funny. Very respectful all the way through. I enjoyed it. All right, how are we doing tonight? Okay, I promise not to keep you long because it's Saturday night. And you're here, and I'm just amazed that they said, yeah, we're adding a service. I said, who is going to come on Saturday night? I mean, so you did. Thank you. Thank you. Paul's speaking to Timothy, and this is what he says. Don't let it, in 1 Timothy 4, I'm going to go down to verse 12. And I just turned the page on myself. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Till I come, give attention to reading and exhortation, doctrine. Don't neglect the gift of God that's in you, given to you through prophecy by the laying on of hands of the eldership. All right, there's a father to a son. If I were, I have a lot of sons and daughters. Yesterday I had lunch with a son in the Lord, and last night my wife and I had a gal over who's just like a second daughter, and actually last night she asked me if I would perform her wedding ceremony. I said, that's so sweet. When are you getting married? She goes, oh, he hasn't asked yet. So I said, let's just hold on to that, and let's not hurry things along. I can see her going back, honey, I've got a preacher for the wedding. What wedding? poor guy. It's kind of like, babe, just put things in order and your life will be. Anyway, being a husband of one wife for almost 44 years, I understand that I can't set things in motion before they've actually been talked about. But he's speaking to Timothy, and he says, meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. So basically, Timothy, here's a list of things for you to do. I want you to do these so the fruit of your life is seen by people. That's what he's saying. And here's my question. I taught junior high for 7 years, by the way, so I'll tell it to the students, so I like feedback. So most Sunday sessions or most church services, people sit and watch. So I'm looking at you all, and I'm asking you to do more than watch tonight. Is that okay? So if I ask something, and it's not rhetorical, I ask something, just shout it out. You won't be wrong. And if you are, we'll just laugh at you. It's not a big deal. It's no, you won't be wrong. Sorry. Why would Timothy have to get a message from Paul about doing these things? Because they've been together. Okay, they're family. There's relationship. Relationship allows honesty and but he's telling Timothy to do certain things also. As your big brother would. Why would he tell you to do them? Because you're not doing them. Okay, so in my thought, in my small brain, I look and go, Paul's telling Timothy to do all these things. I don't think it's arbitrarily, because he doesn't focus really on anyone else with the same kind of list. So personally, I think somebody, here's my 2 cents. Someone came to Paul. Paul said, "How's Timothy doing? It's my son in the Lord." "Oh, he's doing okay." "Doing okay." "Yeah, he's a little, timid about this or that. Is he preaching? Is he in the Word? Do people see it?" "Yeah, he's growing." And so Paul goes, "Okay, I'm going to write Timothy. I'm going to tell him." So this is what I think happens. Now, it could not be true, but I personally think it is. Why do I think it is? Because Paul writes Timothy a second book. Now, the second book of Timothy is Paul's last letter before he dies. So if you're going to do a last letter and they're going to say, "Paul, yeah, let's finish that up. You're going to die." And so he goes, "Okay, I'm not going to write to the church in general. I'm not going to write to the church of a city or a region. I'm going to write, Father, to my son." So Paul's last book that he wrote before he was martyred was 2 Timothy, Father to a Son. Now, the last time Paul wrote those words in 1 Timothy, he waited till chapter 4 so he could say a whole bunch of other stuff. Now, what I think happens is that somebody came by and, "Hey, I sent that letter to Timothy. Haven't seen him, heard much in the last year and a half. How's Timothy doing?" "Oh, he's okay." "Are there services? I mean, people still gathering in his house?" Yeah, it's mostly run by his mom and grandma." Really? "Yeah, he's a good man. He does good stuff, but he kind of holds back." So here we go. 2 Timothy, he doesn't wait for chapter 2, 3, or 4. He goes right at it in chapter 1. After the proverbial, "God, Paul, an apostle of Lord Jesus." And he goes through everything that Paul likes to start. You know, "I love this grace and mercy and peace. Oh, I thank God. I've served with you, desire to see you." And then he says this, verse 5, "When I call to remembrance the faith that's in you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded it's in you too." Basically, what Paul just said, if you translate this in a different form of English, when he says, "I'm persuaded it's in you," it means, "I am pretty sure you have it too." which I love. He's just so honest. "I know it's there. I am convinced it's there." Then he says, "Therefore, I remind you to stir up the gift of God, which is in you by the laying on of..." Whose hands? My hands. 1 Timothy, he says, the eldership or the presbytery laid their hands on you. And he says the exact same words. "I remind you to stir up the gift of God that's in you." Why do you say it twice? Because it didn't happen after the first time. He hears that something's going on with Timothy. He goes, "For the love of God, Timothy." I remind you, stir up the gift of God that's in you. And the first time he was very humble through the laying on of the eldership's hands. This time he goes, I laid my hands on you, dude. I know exactly what's going on. I know who you are. I know the gifts you have. I know the call that's on your life. Now stir up the gift that's in you. Okay? So the question then becomes, across the border from Chattanooga into Georgia, a group of people gather on a Saturday night. They keep gathering on Sunday nights. They're together in small groups, doing things together. And sometimes people go through their entire life a spectator. And they think it's holy. And yet within you is the power of God to raise from the dead. It's in you. It's in you to go up to someone who's really sick. Go, I don't think I can pray for them. Well, recently we had someone go into our children's ministry and said, I believe God's in the children's ministry and I'm supposed to have them pray for me. Children's pastor goes, absolutely, come on in. So they came in. Kids, there were four words of knowledge from 6, 7, and 8-year-olds. And then they prayed over the person, and in front of them, the tumor went away. It was bulging out. How many times, you know, you might not be 8, but how many times have you been 8? 6, 7, 8 times? I don't know. I've been 8 over 8 times. And somehow we get comfortable watching. We get comfortable in community. What we're not comfortable is the stepping out. So Paul recognizes that for some reason he's not comfortable doing this. And that's important. As opposed to someone just yelling at someone for not doing something, Paul goes deeper and goes, why? What's going on? Why is Timothy not stepping out like he needs to step out? What is it that does that? Nowadays, there's all sorts of reasons. Spirit of comparison. Someone does it better. We just have all sorts of reasons, and we reason ourselves out of being the hand, the heart, and the embrace of God, because it's just easier. I'll just tell you right now, it's easier. It's not easier to live with yourself, though, when you watch someone else do what you've been called to do. I don't want to be the ones that weren't Deborah. If you know the story, she finally just rose up and said, she didn't say this, the heck with it, but you know, basically she said, I'm stepping into this role. And she stepped into a role that should have been stepped in by other people. I don't want to be those people. I want to say yes when God says yes. But, you know, sometimes, as the book says, sometimes we get stuck. And so Paul looks at Timothy. Now, there's I went to school. I got a really nice degree. there's a term in that nice degree that's called first reference. I don't know if you've ever heard it. First reference just means that when something shows up in society, but biblically speaking, when something shows up in Scripture as a particular reference to a moment, can we then use that same truth elsewhere? And the answer is yes. But the first reference is the strongest usage of it. Okay, does that make sense, what I just said? Okay, good. So first reference would be something like, God didn't give us a spirit of fear, but a power, love, and a sound mind. Okay? You get up at night, and suddenly the storm just blew, and all the lights went out. You don't like dark. God didn't give me spirit, power, love, sound mind. God didn't give me a spirit of fear, power, love, sound mind. God didn't give me, thank God for the lamp, you know, for the flashlight. Now I've got a flashlight. I don't have to deal with the spirit. But, and so you can use that there, or you're about ready to step on an airplane, and you don't like heights, and you hate airplanes. And I have watched this, people stepping on an airplane, and I've been with them at the time. God didn't give me a spirit of fear. God didn't give me a spirit of fear. And they say that all the way back to their seat. God didn't give me a spirit of fear. Power, love, sound, mind. God didn't give me a spirit of fear. Now, honestly, I don't, they're so fearful when they say it, I don't know if it's got anything going on inside them. But God bless them, at least that they know the scripture. So yeah, it's like, is that the real place where it's used, or is that just a secondary application that God allows us to use? In that particular case, it's called a secondary application. All right, that's awesome. Well, what's the first application? Let's read the next verse. Okay, I remind you, stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying out of my hands, for God has not given you a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. The initial application for the greatest scripture against fear is the invitation to step into your gifting, because people don't step into their gifting because of the number one thing. It's a form of fear. Fear of failure, fear of comparison, fear of looking foolish, fear of having it control my life to be involved in this ministry. I'm fearful that they're going to use and abuse me, whatever it might. It's a fear connected from an old church situation. I don't know what it is. But the spirit of fear is the number one fear that holds people back from doing the ministry God's called them to. Yeah. You guys okay with me now? Did I just step on anything, like a holy cow or something? Is this good?
Yes.
Okay. Now it's time for you. Can anyone provide me? Now, this is intimacy, and we're being vulnerable with one another. Can anyone give me a moment where fear stopped you from doing something within the kingdom? What is, okay, now I'm not asking a rhetorical question. I'm asking a question waiting for my students to have an answer. Praying for somebody in a restaurant. Yeah, okay. I'm not going to do that. Hey, let's bring Wayne along. He's crazy. Do you guys have a Wayne in your life that when you want to go? Or Wayne embarrasses you. Well, hey, dear, I see you got a cast on your hand. And you go, oh, no. Here it comes. That's the spirit of fear. It's a fear of looking foolish. And so we don't do what God may be calling us to do, because it's, I just know that while the time I'm here, we'll be in a restaurant and a guy's going to come over with a cast. I just know it's coming. Anybody else? Come on. I know you're out there. Yes. Nice and loud for everybody. Sure, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. No guilt, no shame. We learn, we grow. The fact that you would even admit that says, I want to walk out of that. That's what that statement says. So that's awesome. That's why when we admit things, it says to the heavens, I'm walking out of this into something better. So that's what vulnerability is. Vulnerability is not the exposure for attack. Vulnerability is the exposure for greater strength. Okay, well, I'll go on, because this side of the room has nothing. You've never, How we doing? Is this all right? All right. So, fear is it attack. The thing about fear, Somebody had a hard time with this till I really explained it to them, and then they went, oh my gosh, you're so right. which was, the enemy knows you and knows things about you that you never knew he knew. Well, how is that possible? Because he was around and his minions were around when you were born. They watched you experience your first fear. They know different things about you that are your giftings. Some of us are going, the Lord's God hasn't shown you my gifting yet. Well, a lot of these demonic, oppressive creatures know what your gifting is. So you know what they do? They put fear into the same area where you're most gifted, so you'll never step into your gift. Because they already know what you're gifted to do. Well, dang. I don't like that. So I'm in high school. I'll probably share this with the students again, but I'm in high school. And it came time, you know how it is in junior high and high school, where you're reading something in class, you know, whatever it might be, and you read a paragraph or two, and then it goes around the room, and it snakes around the room, and everybody reads. Did anybody not like doing that, by the way? Did anybody feel fearful of reading, or like you're going to read it wrong? Boy, behind you, there's a lot of hands that are up. I found a way to get out because I talked about my need for glasses and it was hard for me to see. I was not a Christian. I could see it perfectly. But I had a fear of reading out loud in class. And so I got out of all my classes. I had a fear of speaking. I'm the only guy that ever made it through speech class without giving a speech. I had grandmothers die, aunts die, cousins die. No one ever died. I just made it up. I did not want to speak in speech class because here's what happened. If I was starting to read, and Piggy went down to the, if you know what book I'm talking about, went down and the others gathered around him and they were, and suddenly the letters would start to morph and everything would turn black and I couldn't read anymore and I'd stop and they'd go, what's wrong? Because my headache, I'm having a hard time reading. That wasn't it. I was so filled with fear that the page turned black in about 30 seconds. And so I couldn't read in front of people. I couldn't speak in front of people. When I learned to play guitar at 16 years old, I started writing songs. I couldn't sing in front of people. People would come over. I would go into the bathroom where the tiles were. I'd shut the door, and I said, if you want to hear me, come stand outside the bathroom door. Well, that's not a way to get ahead musically. So that's what I did. I played inside the bathroom for the longest time. And then when they brought me into a group, they said, we want you to be in this group. So I'm standing on stage, and let me see, do you have it? Okay, back in the day, there were all sorts of trees and fake plants up on stages. Anybody remember those days? Yeah, so I would get up there, and I'd take my mic, and just before we started, I'd pull it back, I'd take the fake tree, which weighed 2 ounces. I'd push it in front of me, and I'd stand behind the fake tree. And finally, it took quite a while for people to go, are you on the team? Because I see you go up, but I don't ever see you. And then they gave me a singing part. I'm like, oh, no, I can't sing in front of people. This is terrible. They said, no, you're going to do one bridge. It's one line in the middle of the song. So we're going through the song, and I'm just like dying. And I know I'm now about 30 to 45 seconds away from that. So I take my guitar off, and the band leader looks at me and goes, no. I said, I can't. And I walk outside, walk into the back behind the church. I vomit. I'm just telling you, this is how it is. I vomit. I walk around to the front of the church and wave at the band, from the front. And I finally, that was it. I said, Lord, I finally realized what I'm called to do, the spirit of fear now controls. And so I'm going to go after it with everything I can so that what I'm called to do, I can do without a spirit of fear attached to it. So I got people to fast and pray for me. I literally, something that I can, I don't have time. I'm driving some from here to here. I'd love to do that. I said, put me in the car and have people pray for me while you're driving because I love your prayer. I literally had people praying for me in cars because that was the only time I could get a group of people together. Because I was determined this thing is, and then one day I stood up and I went, what is different? And I knew it lifted from my life. And the one time it came back was a few years later. I'm standing up, I'm going to speak, and this is what I said. This is 1982. I said, wow, I've got this thing down. No, I had nothing. God had everything. And I'm standing there, I said, I had this thing down. And then thank God there was a pulpit, because everything went black, and I just held on to the pulpit and closed my eyes. And I said, oh, God, you hold it together. Okay, I got it. It's you. And then suddenly everything lifted. And people said, what were you doing? I said, getting my act together. So spirit of fear, it wants to attack you in that which is your greatest strength. So the question now is, do you see that? Yeah. What good is it for me to come here and just talk if there's not change? I just took two flights. I got up at 5:30 this morning to come here. You better change. No, seriously, what? How are you not doing the thing that burns in you because a spirit of fear has kept you away from doing it? Wow, I don't know. I don't have the answer. I don't know what your lives are. But you do. Can we walk out of here with a determination to go after fear so it doesn't hold the place that keeps our gifts locked up? Can we do that? Okay. For those that didn't, God bless you. I hate fear. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I've watched fear consume some friends of mine, some of the most gifted friends I've ever known. But they're fearful. And their gift stays inside a little box. It stays inside their house at night. They do it. They've written some of the most amazing songs. Just some of the most amazing songs. It's incredible. So some of them are just the most beautiful painters you ever saw, but they'll never show anything to anybody. And their gift is there. Some are eloquent. Right now, a couple of friends of mine have the gift of leadership on them, and they have a gift of persuasion. And they've talked about being politicians, but they're afraid of what they'll get into if they step into politics. That's understandable. I understand. It's not an easy world. Here's the thing. They want to do it when you get them down to it, but they're afraid. Even their wives and kids are like, no, Dad, go for it. This is great. No. So anyway, my friend Bill decided to do it. He stepped into as a friend of mine, he was when I was pastoring in Nashville, he was on our elder board. And one day he said, I'm stepping off the board. I said, why is that? He said, because I think I'm supposed to understand the world that I'm in, the school, the county, the culture, and I'm supposed to bring change to it. And we were like, this is awesome. God bless. Go for it, man. And that was, I don't know, about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. He's now the governor of Tennessee. Yeah, because he stepped away from a comfortable elder in a church of 800 people where he was honored and loved, and now he gets hate letters. People want him dead. They want his family dead. And he's like, I'm doing what I'm called to do, and this is awesome. And now there I've got people around him that want him to run for president, which he doesn't want to do, but I know him. That if God says yes, he'll do it, and he'll win. And then I'll know the president, I'll get all sorts of perks. No, I won't. That's not true. Okay. That was the 45-minute thing was probably supposed to start running, so I'm sure I don't have 45 more minutes. but can you guys last another 15, 20 minutes? Are you okay? Are we having fun? All right. You're Pentecostal. You're fine. Okay. I like that. Another one that to me, it we get stuck with. By the way, let me go back to fear. You know what the number two fear in the United States is right now? And I love this because no one wants to be wrong. It's the fear of being wrong in a Sunday service. No. It's the fear of death. People fear death. I mean, you know, when I was a little kid, I was never going to die. Remember that when you were a kid? I'm going to live forever. Well, I just turned 67. I'm not going to have 67 more years. So I'm going, oh, wow. Wow, it's almost time. it's just different. I'm not doing 50-year plans anymore. That being the case, the fear of death, the amount of people that admit that they go to sleep wondering how they'll die is huge. Now, I'm not trying to instill a fear of death right now. I'm just trying to say that it's already there. But you know what the number one fear is? Fear of public speaking. So people would rather die than speak in public. Oh. And down there a little ways away is fear of not having enough money in my older age. Wow. Dealing with that one right now. I'll get through it, though. So fear is huge. The second, I may not get to the third because of time, but the second thing that because it happened to me for so long, I finally decided to write about it. All right? I bet there's some athletes in here. People appreciate sports. Anybody like sports? Okay, a few. Okay, if I say the name Mike Krzyzewski, does that resonate with anyone besides the two boys in the first row? Mike Krzyzewski? Okay. Mike Krzyzewski has been coach of the Duke basketball team since Abraham Lincoln. Now, he's been there a long, long time. He has won more Division I basketball games than any other coach in history. Best coach, he's just called the best coach in history. and what drives somebody like that? And I'll tell you one of the things that drives something, if you know the program. Now, if you're a North Carolina fan, you hate Mike Krzyzewski because he's literally just down the road and they've beaten you more times than you've beaten them. So, you know, if you're a North Carolina fan, what I'm saying here, you've probably gone to another place. So Mike Krzyzewski, his mom, when he was little, his mom said, I saw greatness on you. And I knew that you would get favor soon. And so she said this, don't let anyone on your bus unless they're going to take you to a good place. So as a little five-year-old kid, it's like, don't let anybody on my bus. I don't drive a bus, Mom. She says, no, you'll understand. 8, 9, 10, don't let anybody on your bus unless they're going to help you go to a great place. And then suddenly realized, wow, well, this friend of mine is not helping me go to a great place. So he removed that friend from his life. And then he kept gathering people around him, which is why over the years, you know, the guy, I'm sure he's not perfect, but he's been fairly scandal-free for like 40 years. which is almost unheard of in college sports. Why? Because he's when pushed, and I've heard him say it, when pushed, he goes, "Well, I don't let anybody on the bus unless I know they're going to help us go to a good place." How did he hear that? Well, his mother. It drove him into it. His mother was the voice in his head. When it was time for me and my brother to go out somewhere, my mother would say, "Go stand by the front door. I'll be right with you." So we would go stand by the front door. My mother would put up a little plaque, and it was right there by the front door. So she told us to go to the front door, so we would read the plaque by the front door. Now, I have not seen this plaque in 50 years. But the plaque said, the title was Mother. "To one who bears the sweetest name and adds a luster to the same, who shares my joys, my tears when sad, the greatest friend I've ever had, long life to her, for there's no other can take the place of my dear mother." Why did my mother make me stand by the plaque? So I would memorize the plaque. And so I would then think of my, seriously, she was the voice in my head growing up. My mother was the voice in my head. My mother said things like, "You'll be great today. You'll be great today. How was school? It was a tough day. Yes, but you made it. You made it, and you did well overcoming what you needed to overcome." And what she did was she did something similar to Mike Krzyzewski's mom, which was, don't add people to your life that will hurt you. Don't add them to your life. Now, a funny thing is that when, okay, now I'm going to step on a little sacred cow, is that when we get hurt within a church setting, we immediately find people who are probably hurt as well. They don't help you. They confirm the demonic activity that's been going around you the whole time. They're not helping you. You want to have someone who will take you out of despair and anger and bitterness. You do not want someone that's going to make you more desperate, more anxious, and more bitter. But we do it because we think it gives us internal strength. What it does, it removes the strength to move forward. It gives you strength to stay in one place and then go down. And you feel stronger when you're really not. Yeah, that was not a big yes and amen. I understand that. There's so many things I could say here. another sports figure, because I love sports. I played pro soccer for a while. I was scouted out by Villanova, William & Mary with a full ride scholarship for track and field, because at the age that I was, as a high school kid, I was beating Olympians when they were my age. So because of that, they wanted to train me for the decathlon for 1976. So I threw myself into all kinds of different sports. And some of you are looking going, really? What's that? That's where all my training went to. That's. How many know anything about track? Track. A few of you? Okay. So as a 16-year-old, I was running 47 seconds. I was triple jumping 48, 49 feet at 16. That doesn't happen when you're 16. So I had all these people coming after me, and they didn't rake out the back end of a 50-foot pit, because high school kids don't jump at the back end of a 50-foot pit. This was to take me to states. I was seated in two. This was to take me to nationals. I was seated in two events in nationals. I landed on a rock because no one raked it out, and my left ankle exploded, and I lost my track scholarships, and I lost everything. So I went and spiraled down into this depression. What am I good for? What am I good for? I'm good for nothing. I've lost everything. The people that were going to give me money and give me, you know, it's all gone. My father comes along and says, "So since you can't go anywhere, here's a guitar. Learn how to play." That guitar changed my life. Shortly thereafter, I got saved. I became a guitar player and a worship leader and been leading worship for 45 years. So God had something better for me. And that's okay. I The rest is whatever. So my love for sports. So there's a guy named Phil Jackson. Anybody know Phil Jackson? Okay, same kind of a thing. A few of you guys. Okay, he was a ball player, played basketball, NBA. He won 2 rings playing NBA. And then he won 7 rings as a coach, or 9. I think maybe 9. 9 rings as a coach. He's got 11 rings. He has more hands than rings to put them on. more rings than hands to put them on. I mean, wow, this guy's got 8 hands. Yes. He's a handy guy. What can I say? So he's got more rings than fingers that he can put them on. And this is what his father said. His father watched this guy grow up being the best athlete around, but he was starting to sprout a spirit of arrogance. And his father knew if this kid goes into college and pro ball as an arrogant, unlikable man, it's going to stunt what God has in him. His father was a preacher. He said, it's going to stunt because I've seen that. I've watched arrogance and pride bring men down at the height of their gifting. So this is what he told him. The bigger your shoes get, the bigger your head gets, the easier it's going to be to fill your shoes. He put it on a plaque, and it sits on his desk to this day. The bigger your head gets, the easier it's going to be to fill your shoes. So my question is, who's the voice in your head? If you were to stop right now and I say, okay, class time, we're going to take 5 to 10 minutes. You're all going to write down right now, who's the biggest influencer in your head? What voice from the past still has power over you? A lot of people, it's their mother and father. A lot of people, it was a teacher that gave them positive reinforcement. I taught junior high for 7 years, and I just got this letter from a gal. Said, Mr. Dupre, now it's really funny when a 42-year-old calls you Mr. Dupre. Mr. Dupre, I cannot thank you enough. I'm thinking, for what? He says, when I was in 7th grade, I handed in a paper, and you called me up to your desk, and I was scared. And you said, Elizabeth, don't tell anyone in this class. This is the best written paper. This is not just the best written paper I've seen today. This is the best written paper from a junior high student I have ever seen. You have a gift to write. And I just want to encourage you. She was awkward. She wasn't a pretty gal. She was overweight. Some of the kids mocked her. And I stood there and I said, you have a gift to write. If you gave yourself to this, I cannot imagine what God would do with you. It took all of 1 minute of time. That became the voice in her head. She now has 2 bachelor's and 2 master's degrees in writing and communication because of that moment. Wow. I didn't think I was doing anything great. I was just trying to encourage a girl that was going through a tough time, saw something she did, called it out, and then spoke hope. It doesn't take long, but there are other voices that come along. There's a voice that came along years ago. My mother, my stepmother, my dad remarried, and, you know, as a pastor, we were, you know, we just were struggling financially, and my dad died, and, you know, we went to the funeral. I helped coordinate things, and I was over to her house later, and she said to me, so what's next for you? I said, well, we're actually going to be moving to Kansas City to be a part of a church and a movement going on in Kansas City. And she said, oh, okay. Well, the one thing my father and I always used to say about you is that you're such a sweet man and you'll never make any money. Where did that come from? But you know what? You know what stuck in my head? Not a sweet man. I will never make any money. It's wild. It's stuck. And every now and then it pops up. And I have just to say, you know, her name was Marion. Shut up, Marion. That was funny, wasn't it? She's so cute. Okay, you don't have to tell me what it is, but how many have a voice in your head that's not the most positive, that's been with you for a while? Oh, no, keep your hand up. I want everyone to see how many hands are up. Okay, now, vulnerability time. Would any of you that put your hand up, which was almost all of you, tell me what that voice was or what it's trying to say? You don't have to say who it is. You can if you want. But anybody want to share? Your mom? Can I ask what it was? He's not laughing. How does that, what do you think about that? Is she smart enough? My grandmother got saved at 82. I went back to school at 58. I got my doctorate. It's not too late. You're a smart gal. You're not just a smart girl, you're a brave girl because you've now put your hand up 2 or 3 times. You have bravery. You can overcome fear. I'm not saying it's got to be school, but you're not an ignorant, dumb woman. You're a smart woman. Am I right? Yeah. Yeah, what are you going to say? No, she's an idiot. That's beautiful. Anybody else? I'm looking this way just so I can find someone from over here. Yes, ma'am. Your mother said you'll never be as good as your brother. Are you married to her? Are you married to her? Okay, that's good because you're sitting next to her. Is she a good woman? Do you know her brother? That is the high point of the night right there. What? Say that again? What's your name? Barbara. Barbara, you're amazing. Whatever was said to you isn't true, and it's not too late to break it. As I said, my grandmother, and the reason I'm saying this is that she had voices in her head until 82. She said yes to Jesus, and they all went away. She spent the next 17 years having visions of Jesus. You got a great future ahead of you. You're a writer. You know what the difference between writers, people that write, and people that don't write? People that write, write. That's right. So write. You write what you know. You write what you're good at. Don't compare it with anybody else. Put it in your own language and just see what God does. See, this is where I wish I had like 5 hours. Oh, we would have fun. I just love seeing people empowered. I love the enemy losing. I don't care what age he loses at. You know, I don't care what age you're at when suddenly his power is dismantled and you're free. Anybody over on this side, over here? going, still going. All right. Even though everybody and their brother raised their hand, we got 2 of you. Because we still haven't dealt with the spirit of fear. Oh, what's 7:51? I want to get you guys out of here. Can I touch one more thing real fast? I met the Lord in 1973. I was 19 years old, been playing guitar a couple years, got thrust into this music group that ended up traveling around parts of the nation, and we were well known at the time, and it was fun. And it's kind of a heady thing for a 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old to go to all these places and to sing in front of a whole lot of people. And honestly, I was the only guy in the entire group that was not married. So every place we went, they tried to fix me up with the local someone. That was a drag. Sometimes you know immediately. Sometimes it takes, you know, more than 5 seconds. Sorry, that was a bit. But I got to know all these people back then because of the role I had. I got to meet a lot of famous musicians and Christian singers in the 70s, early 80s. Actually, I got more to know over the years, but we'll leave that as it is. And so one of the things that drove me crazy is that they knew they were good and they wanted you to know that they were good. If you're good, I know you're good. You don't have to reinforce it to me to let me know how good you really are. Oh, yeah, we've done this. And they just went on and on. And they went, there's always an entire list of people. I'm not giving you names, but they would give you names and tell you how they knew them. It's like something, I don't know what it is. Did they want me to fall deeper in love with them? Because that certainly didn't work. And then I watched preachers do the same thing, and they had a spiel and a way of talking that so-and-so from 1976 talked that way, so in 1982 they're going to talk the same way, and in 1986 they're going to talk exactly the same way as this one, and I'm sorry to say, and you've been around, gosh, I don't know, 80, 90 years, and I'm sorry, Jimmy. But you've been around a while to watch people that are one way here and different in the green room or a restaurant. That's the one that killed me, is when I finally watched in a restaurant how this famous preacher treated the people that were waiting on him. He was the most entitled person, I think, at that point in time I'd ever met in my life. I've met a few more. And I could not believe that, and here's the thing. A man's gift makes room for him. So he has this gift, and God makes room for him. I could never understand that. And then I realized that the gifts that God gives, he doesn't take them away. But unfortunately, he allows us sometimes to get trapped, not by the gift, but by the character. And when we get trapped by the lack of character, the gift is trapped as well, and it's not able to be used. So arrogance will chain gifts to the legs of the person that walks with arrogance. And I went along the lines of saying, you know what, I don't know if I'm not the most humble person in the world, but I want a spirit of humility to reign in my life so that doesn't happen. And I'm going to have you turn over real fast, and we'll end with two quick stories. You're saying, pastors, don't do quick stories. I can. I might not, but I can. No, I will. I will do this quickly. In the book of John, without the glasses, I kept going further into Acts because it just looked like John. Sorry. So help me here. What does Peter feel like after he denies the Lord three times? Crap. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. He felt like crap. Can I say crap here? Because if I can't say crap, I won't say crap. Okay. He felt awkward. Can you imagine? You've denied the Lord three times. What's that got to feel like? You feel horrible. You feel horrible. And so they decide, you know, I'm going to go back fishing. So in verse 20, chapter 21, of John. These things Jesus showed himself again at Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathaniel, and a bunch of disciples. They were together, and he said, I'm going to go fishing. They said to him, we're going with you. They went out and immediately got in the boat, and that night they caught nothing. When the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore, yet they did not know that it was Jesus. So here's the scenario. They're going to go back to fishing because they got nothing else. We're not going to go out. He feels horrible. He feels horrible. And they're out fishing, and they fish all night long. And then Jesus is on the shore, and this is what they hear. I literally had to go look all this up in the Greek because it was like, there's got to be more to this than I think it is. And he says, children, have you any food? I looked up the word children. It means little tots or baby boys. So Jesus is going, little boys, hey boys, do you get any food? Now, imagine Peter, the old Peter. What would the old Peter would have done? You talking to me? It's kind of like taxi driver, you know, Robert De Niro. You talking to me? Some of you going, I don't understand. Don't look it up and don't watch it. But instead, someone has gone from anger, pride, I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to save Jesus, cut this guy's ear off, and now, boom, he denies him three times. He's got to feel like slime. And so on the other side of this, we have a new Peter. What would the older Peter have done? What? What are you talking about? You don't know nothing. Who are you? He doesn't do that. Instead, it says they answered, no. Why? Because every aspect of pride fell through for them. They got nothing left. Now, they could have gone back, but they embraced humility. Humility says, I didn't catch anything. Humility says, I wasn't very good right then. Humility is honesty. It didn't come through. Okay? And Jesus says, well, we'll cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some. We think it's a big boat. I have been down to this exact spot, okay, and they still have what's called Jesus boats. They have Jesus boats because the boats that are down there, they realize they could make a lot of money by making the same kind of boats that Jesus went in, and then people can come down, get in the Jesus boat, and go out onto the lake. So that's what they do. They've had Jesus boats since then. So I went down there, and you know how wide the Jesus boat is? That wide. I can put 1 foot on one side and 1 foot on the other side. Now, maybe I was a little younger, and I could go a little bit, stretch it further. But I want to walk later tonight, so I'm just as far as I'm. It wasn't that far. That's why you can think of it, 12 disciples and Jesus in a boat at once. That's not a safe boat. So they're out there fishing, and Jesus says, well, throw the net on the other side of the boat. And the guys are like, if they're not here, they're not there. We're not talking about throw it way over here in the shoal where the water is deeper there. He's saying, pick up the net, throw it on the other side 4 feet over. And they could have answered him, who is this idiot? Peter goes, I don't know. I don't know, but he's driving me crazy. But that's not what they do. It says this, so they cast, and now they were more than able to draw in because of the multitude of fish. 153 fish just came in. What did they do? They picked this up, pulled it over, set it down. 153, it says 153 large fish came into the nets and they pulled it in. What does humility do? Humility allows provision to take place where arrogance didn't. Sometimes there's just a door of humility waiting for you. It's just sitting there, and you want to answer like you would have answered before. God stills your tongue and allows you to step out in a spirit of humility. That humility, if you go on to humility, Nahum is I'm not going to go there, but he humbles himself. You know, he goes to the door. Your master is supposed to wave, literally he says this, he's going to wave his hand over me and I shall become whole and I will lose all my leprosy. But he never comes out. Elisha never comes out. Actually, he says to a servant, go to the door and tell him to dump into the Jordan River seven times. So a little Bobby comes out. I shall have the hand of the master where, no. Who are you? Bobby. Why are you here? Because he's busy. But I came with all these horses and all these men. I have all this gold. I have all this. And yeah, okay. He said, dump in the Jordan River seven times. The word to go into the Jordan, the word to go down into the Jordan means this in Hebrew. It means bob like a kid. You ever see that when your kids are out? Oh, it's just so much fun. So basically he's telling the commander of the Syrian army, go to the Jordan and bob up and down seven times like a little baby. And he has to do it in front of all of his men. So he goes down, he bobs like a baby. All right. And on the fifth time, I'm sure he looked at his hands. On the sixth time, he's going, this is stupid. And on the seventh time, he went, oh my gosh. Humility just brought physical healing. And it does that. Sometimes we have to, like Jamie was talking about, sometimes we have to humble ourselves in situations and pray that God brings healing. Or sometimes we have to humble ourselves and go to a doctor because we are so arrogant that we think we know everything. Or sometimes we're not supposed to go to a doctor because God's saying, I'm going to help you with this. You just don't, I don't know. Humility is a doorway, and on the other side of it, I look at it, I see its prosperity, the fish, and I see its healing. And I look over, and when I was going through writing this book, I said, what are the things that I've been held back? What are the things that have been hardest for me? And I looked, and I said, a spirit of fear has kept me. It almost kept me from using gifts that I have. What else? The voice in my head was my father. It was my father who said things when I was younger. It was a coach who used to say horrible things to me. He was using it as motivation because he knew I was the best at it, but he killed me with his criticism. And then I look and I go, whatever I'm given, if I don't carry it with humility, I'm in trouble. And if I do carry it with humility, there's prosperity and healing on the other side. So I just want to encourage us tonight, whether those three areas, there's others that I have in there, but to be honest, and that's why I said, I don't want to come here and then not have your heart to respond. So do me a favor, would you? Would you just stand for a moment right where you are? I just want you to put your hand on your heart. I want you to put both hands on your heart. Father, you say you haven't given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and soundness of mind. And so that's what I pray for each of us here. The opposite of what fear wants to do, it wants to remove power from us so that we're empowered to move forward. It wants to eliminate love, and when fear is mixed with love, it's called comparison. It's also called jealousy. Some people are jealous of other people. You might love them, but you're jealous of them because fear has twisted love and made jealousy. And Lord, for any areas that you're asking, saying, you know, I want you to lay that down. I want you to humble yourself. I want you to go to that person. And though you think they should be the first one to admit they're wrong, why don't you go? Lord, these three areas, there's so many more, but these three areas in our lives, we just need you to come. We want to be what we are, who you made us to be. But Lord, we want to be what you've called us to be. So I ask for an empowering spirit upon this group tonight, that they wouldn't have come in and just heard a message, been challenged a little bit, laugh a little bit, and then forget a lot. But I pray that there'd be a spirit of honesty and ability to self-evaluate what's going on and where the enemy might have a foothold. We ask every chain to be broken, and power, love, and soundness of mind would be the hallmark of each of us here tonight. We just bless you in Jesus' name. Amen.